Morning, everybody. My name's Dick Sudbury. I'm glad to be here. Thanks for inviting me, and I got to tell you a little bit about myself. I was born in Atascadero, California. Got to make some more noise. I was adopted when I was 4 days old and taken to Salt Lake City with my new parents. And I grew up around Salt Lake and that vicinity. I am a member of the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints. I wanted to mention that because I wanted you to see that we don't have horns on our head. We're just normal people, just like you guys. When I was 17, I coerced my mother into signing me into the Navy. At that point of my life, I was already an alcoholic. I was drinking alcoholically. And the Navy is a perfect place for an alcoholic. I mean, it was great. It was great. We used to have parties every Friday, and they'd have a keg of beer there. And there would be a group of guys out playing baseball or football or whatever the season was, and a group standing around the keg and the thing, and I was one of the guys standing around the keg all the time. I spent 20 years in the Navy, and I retired as a Navy chief. By that time, my alcoholism was just about out of control. The reason I bring that up, too, is because it's going to come back later on in the story. I was married and divorced while I was in the Navy. I had three wonderful kids through that marriage. It was 9 years, and I feel like it was a lifetime. I mean, whenever I was out at sea, everything was fine, but when I get home, we'd fight like cats and dogs. A friend of mine said, "How do you think she felt during that 9 years, you know?" So I have to give her some credit for putting up with it. Then I met my wife, my second wife, and it was like we were just totally bosom buddies, you know. Now, I was born in Atascadero. She was born in Los Angeles. She grew up in Nevada. I grew up in Salt Lake. And we met in Oak Harbor, Washington. I mean, talk about a miracle. And it was like we were meant to be together, you know. I was working at Boeing after I retired from the Navy, and I was working on a radar system for a 767 out on the flight line. And you got to get under the floor of the flight deck and crawl forward on this insulation material. And there's a switch up there that is used by the radar, and I had to fix that. Well, I was up there, and all of a sudden I couldn't breathe. And I didn't know if I was going to get out of there or not, because nobody else knew I was up there. But I did finally crawl out of there and got some fresh air. And I went and seen the doctor. And they said, "Well, there's a little problem with your heart, but it's not bad yet." So I went back to work. And over the next year, it got bad enough to do something about. And I went to a cardiologist. Dr. Neil Smith, great big guy. He put me on a treadmill, and they worked me real hard, and then they put me on a table, and they took an ultrasound machine and looked at my heart of what it was doing. And he said I had 53% of what a man my age should have, which wasn't real good. Of course, And he said, I had cardiomyopathy, which is Latin for a weak heart muscle. So over the next few years, things just went downhill. I was just getting sicker and sicker. And in 1999, I just couldn't take it anymore. I couldn't work. And I went to Social Security to see what I had to do to get a disability retirement. And they said, quit work, and then we'll talk to you. So I did that. And that was crazy because we were like 11 months without any income. If it hadn't been for my dear sweet wife and her financial abilities, we'd have gone under. She had enough money squirreled away that we could get through that period. In 2008, it got so bad that they had to put a pacemaker defibrillator in my chest. And the first time that thing went off, oh man, it was like a mule kicking me in the chest. I was down at Don's restaurant in Marysville, and my wife, and I was having a French dip sandwich, and I was holding the cup of au jus in my hand and dipping my sandwich in it. And I looked out the window, and all of a sudden my vision kind of went like that. And I felt this swirling motion, and then whap, it hit me. That was the first time it ever shocked me. And I looked down, and the cup of au jus was empty. And I always wear a baseball cap, and it was dripping off the rim of the hat. So I said, I think we better go to the hospital. My wife drove me there, and they put me in a room and kept me overnight. And over the next 7 years, that kept happening. I mean, it just seemed like it was random to me, but what would happen was my heart would run away and just get beat really fast. And it wouldn't pump any blood because the valves didn't have enough time to open and close. The first time that happened, that was before I had the pacemaker. The paramedics got there and he said, your heart rate is 192 beats a minute. And I said, wow, that's cool. So they gave me a shot of pain medication, and that brought my heart rate down to 160. And then they put me in the ambulance, and on the way they said, we got to get your heart rate down, so we're going to hit you with the paddles at the lowest setting. I never had that done before, so they did. Zap. I seen this really bright white light, and I seen people walking around behind there. Nobody spoke to me, and I didn't see any faces I recognized, but all of a sudden I was back in the ambulance. I didn't know what that was. It kind of scared me a little bit. A friend of mine had a similar experience. He said that was a near-death experience, because when they hit you with those paddles, that stops your heart momentarily, and then it restarts on its own. But to me, that just reiterated a belief I've had since I was a kid, that when we leave this earth, we go to a better place. And I believe that with all my heart. Over the 7 years I had that pacemaker defibrillator, it saved my life 15 times, as near as I can remember. I would, a couple of times I would black out and then it would hit me. That happened in an AA meeting one day. That was exciting. We were having a birthday meeting, and we were having birthday cake. And I picked up a couple of empty plates, and I was going to put them in the garbage can, and I never made it there. Next thing I know, I'm laying on my back, and I got three people patting me on the face, trying to wake me up. And I remember we had two nurses in that group. And one of them said, check his airway. I said to myself, is there something wrong with my airway? I didn't know. And then I opened my eyes, and then they all wanted me to lay still. So the paramedics come, and they hauled me off to the hospital. And over the period of time that I had that little thing, I have ridden in every aid car and every medic unit that Marysville owns, at least once each, some of them a couple of times. It got in May of 2015, it got so bad that I ended up in the UW hospital, and they were really having a lot of trouble regulating my heartbeat because it would just take off, go by itself. So they said, the only thing we can think of is to put an extra pump in there to help you, your heart pump. It was, they called it an LVAD, which was a left ventricle assist device. And they put it in, and all of a sudden I didn't have a pulse. It was the strangest thing because this pump runs continuously. And they had, the nurses had to do some special stuff to get my blood pressure. Because with no pulse, I don't know, you know, what your systolic or your diastolic is. And so they had to use a little ultrasound machine to listen to my blood flowing through my arm. And that was quite an experience. I was laying there one night, and I was kind of worried, you know, that I wasn't going to get a heart. They'd put me on the transplant list, and I was 68 years old when I went on that transplant list, and that really is a miracle, because they normally don't put people that old on a transplant list. Anyway, I was laying in the hospital one night, feeling really down, because I didn't know what was happening, and it was a real fearful time in my life. And so I had the TV switched on, and I was watching it, and I was learning everything I ever wanted to know about the Power Pressure Cooker XL. I bought one of those things, and it's great. It works good. But the nurses are some of my favorite people in the world. She saw how down I was and how much I needed something. So she went and made me a chocolate milkshake. You know how much a little bit of chocolate can change your outlook on life? Man, everything was okay then, you know. On the 3rd of August, 2015, the head surgeon at UW come into my room, and he said, you might as well move your stuff in here. You're not leaving until you get a new heart. And I had talked to some volunteers that had heart transplants in the past, and they waited 2 or 3 years to get their heart. I really didn't think I'd last that long, to tell you the truth. And on the 19th, I got a call at 3:30 in the morning. We got you a high-risk CDC heart. Do you want it? Heck yes, I want it. Jeez, I'm dying there. The high-risk part of it was that the donor, which this is her picture here, if you get a chance to look at it later on, do so. She's a beautiful woman. She was 29 years old, and she died from a heroin overdose. We don't really know what happened. She was in the bathroom by herself. She passed out. Blood got cut off to her brain. By the time the paramedics got there, they estimated it was 20 minutes without any oxygen to her brain. But they were able to keep her alive long enough to, for the family to make the decision to do the donations. And they harvested her heart, her kidney, both kidneys, and the liver. Excuse me. And I got the heart. I didn't get into the operating room until about 2:30 that afternoon. The rest of the time was spent testing the heart or testing me, doing more tests on me. And it was a successful operation. The surgeon that did it said it was a textbook operation. It just went perfectly. It still took 6 hours, you know. I was in ICU for another week after that. And I kind of lost a couple of days there because they had me pretty doped up. Some friends came and visited me, and we weren't really sure of where that heart had come from at that time. And the night before that, four teenagers had got killed in Marysville out on the reservation. And we surmised that maybe one of those hearts was the one I got. And one of my friends, Fred C., said, you know, you're going to have to change your birthday because those kids were all using. Nah. Anyway, I came through the operation fine. I had one little glitch where the sac, the pericardial sac around your heart, filled up with blood. And it was so thick that it wouldn't drain out through the drains that I had. The doctor came in and he pumped in some what they call TPA, and they use it for stroke patients, and it thins your blood out really a lot. And then it had to sit in there an hour to work on that, and then he came in and drained it. And we did that all night long. Well, that was one of the longest nights of my whole life. In the meantime, during all this time that I was having these heart troubles, my wife was diagnosed with Alzheimer's disease. And she progressively got worse over the period of time. And I was so sick, I couldn't take care of her. I had to put her in a home. And she just deteriorated really quickly. She forgot how to eat. She couldn't dress herself. She didn't know her own kids. That's just the most terrible disease I've ever seen. It took the sweetest, kindest, loving person that I've ever met and made an animal out of her that couldn't put three words together in a sentence. And it was just terrible. But she passed away, and one of the things that I kind of regretted was that she wasn't physically here with me to share my new life with this new heart I've got. And all my friends tell me she's here. You know, she knows what you're going through. I don't know. I've been told I kind of speak in parables. You know, I tell the story and you have to draw what you can out of it, basically. And I feel so blessed. And God's been working in my life for years, and I didn't even realize it. When I was in the Navy, I was what you might call a Class 1A sinner, you know? I was not a good person. When I got sober in 1986, that completely changed my life. I had a a contact with my God that I just couldn't explain to anybody else, and it changed my life completely. Part of the deal with my wife having Alzheimer's is I kind of got angry with God, because I was doing my part. You know, I was praying. I was wearing out the knees of my trousers praying, and she wasn't getting any better. And after she had passed away, one of my friends said, there are natural laws and there are spiritual laws. God works on the spiritual side. He did not give Verna Alzheimer's disease, so you can't blame him for it. That made it all better. I got my faith back. Since the transplant, it's just been a total miracle, the whole thing, from end to end. The life I have now is just, I couldn't even imagine it 4 years ago. Some people that's known me over that period of time said I was really looking sick. You know, I was gray all the time. I didn't have any energy, and I couldn't do anything. But the only thing I could do was get out of bed, go in, sit in my recliner in the front room, and that was about it. But now I can do just about anything I like. Bill and I went to a Silvertips game last night. Had a heck of a good time. We even climbed stairs. Anyway, I'm so grateful to God for blessing me with all these blessings that I've had over the years. I testify to you guys that Jesus Christ is alive and well, and He knows each one of us personally. And I bear this testimony to you in the name of Jesus Christ. Amen.